This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time to talk that talk, and we talk it like no one else.
This is The Stinking Truth.
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey, welcome to the Stink Truth Podcast. Alongside Mike Evans, I am Mark Schlereth. Thank you so much for subscribing. We have grown. We appreciate you for that. Also, drop us a question, and we will try to get back to you on that. I've been doing that a lot lately, so kind of interacting with folks. So make sure you subscribe, give us a question, we'll get to you. Mike, how are you, buddy?
I'm fired up. Can we just jump right into this?
Yeah, sure.
Because I got to talk about Caleb Williams' pro day yesterday. Holy smoke. Did you see some of the balls he was throwing? Was one of those like, I mean, it looked like it was like 80 yards, a dime.
You're trying to instigate me, right?
No, I understand why the dude is like, you can just tell.
The pro days might be the dumbest thing
Oh, man,
did you see Caleb Williams? I mean, he dropped back in shorts and a t-shirt, and he threw a 70-yard dot. That's what I heard yesterday. You want to see a dot? Let me bend over and grab my ankles. I'll show you a dot. I'm dead serious. That has nothing to do with your ability to play football. I don't understand how we get so enamored. You know what it is? You know what it is, honestly? It's a bunch of guys that were scouts or GMs that weren't athletes that wanted so badly to be athletes that they just get enamored with athleticism. What do I tell you all the time? On our radio show, I tell you this all the time. Football is easy for football players. It is hard for athletes. Like, I want football players. That doesn't tell me anything. Caleb Williams got a big arm. Well, I already knew that. We knew that. So if you can't have success on a pro day when everything is scripted, you've run through it six or seven times with the guys that you're throwing routes with. Like, I always get enamored by, he was, you know, I don't know what he was, but 58 of 62, and there were two drops. The guy was dead and almost perfect, you know? I mean, it just is like, Lord have mercy. You people are idiots. Idiots, I say.
Sorry, I didn't hear a single thing after dot.
What, you want to see my dot?
No, I don't want to see your dot. No, thank you. And I think I speak for everybody out there. We don't want to see.
I've been lifting a lot, so there's some speed bumps in my dot. Preparation H.
Oh,
go get yourself some.
Oh, my God. How do I rescue this thing? You and I were talking
about...
But
you know what... You understand
no, I,
what
I... No, I was being sarcastic at the beginning because it's... Well, then what is the value of... A pro day, then. There's got to be something. Is there anything?
You
don't see any value at all in a pro day.
Well, you get to go what? You get to go prod him and poke him, and you get to go look at him, or what? Like,
I guess you do see how they handle some kind of pressure, right? Because there's everyone's there. They're huddled right around you. It's all kind of clustered representatives from every single team. So I guess there is a little bit of pressure to see how you handle it. I tried.
So, yeah. So here's the hypocrisy. If we want to talk about being a hypocrite, showing up to other people's pro days and working out and just killing the workouts essentially put me on the map.
Yeah, it's a great story. Go ahead, tell
us. Yeah, so, I mean, I showed up to my teammate Marvin Washington's workouts. He invited me to his workouts, crushed him. I don't play in the NFL if it's not for Marvin Washington.
Because he was a defensive guy, and he needed an offensive guy to, show that?
No, it wasn't even that. There was only one team. This is so typical. All right, so I've never told you this. There was only one team. So I would show up to his workouts, introduce myself to the scouts, and basically say, hey, listen, you know, I played here. I played offensive line here. I'm a good player. I played a lot of different positions. I got hurt a lot, but I got through the season healthy, and I just love the opportunity to work out for you guys, right? And so most of the scouts would be like, sure, why not? We're working him out. It's not going to hurt us to have two guys run a 40. Like, what the hell's the difference, right? Two guys to do the shuttle test. So we were really just running and jumping and benching and doing all that kind of stuff for the most part. So Marvin invited me to 6-7 of his workouts, and I showed up and kicked his ass and everything, Marvin will tell you, and ultimately put me on the map. And the irony of it is, and here's what needs to happen. The workout is nothing more than assessment of athleticism. That's it. Doesn't say whether you can play or not. But because my athleticism was such, it made scouts go up and watch my film. And when they watched my film, they were like, oh, shit, this guy can play. That was the difference. So Marvin did that for me. But there was one team, like, I'm going to just tell you what happened, and then you tell me, you guess the team.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
So there was one team that was really high on Marvin, and Marvin was supposed to be a second, third round pick somewhere in there. He ended up going in the sixth round. And I always joke with him. I was like, you went in the sixth round because I whipped your ass in all those workouts, right? Yeah. And they downgraded you after that. So
I cost you four rounds.
Yeah. So one team came to work him out, and they were working him out specifically as a defensive end. And so I introduced myself to the team and asked, you know, if I could work out. Everybody else was enthusiastic. All these other teams were enthusiastic. Yeah, absolutely. You'll work out. Like, we'd love to, you know, we'd love to see it. This team was like, they were like, I guess you're a friend of Marvin's, right? And like, right? So they were just using me. They had no, they didn't care. It didn't matter. They were just there for Marvin. And so, like I said, every other team did this, like, did their due diligence. And when I ran, like, I'm like 280, and I'm running 4.72, you know, 4.76. Right. I'm putting up ridiculous, and they're handheld times, but they're ridiculous times, right? I mean, I did more on the bench press test in college than anybody at the combine this year did. You know, it was ridiculous stuff. And this team has no intention. They don't care. They're just there to work out Marvin. So then they asked me to play dummy, like blocking dummy, and to take sets and stuff. And so, of course, you know, me being the snarky ass that I am, I recognize right off the bat that they have no interest in me, no interest. So they're saying, hey, take this set. Marvin's going to pass rush on you, right? So I take the set. Marvin, you know, hand swipes and goes around me. And they're all like watching Marvin. I go, and I just started going, hey, how was that set? Did you see that set? Did you watch it? Okay, but make sure you watch it this time. Watch it. And I would just, every time we'd do a drill, I would go to one of their scouts and go, what'd you think about, like, what, my stuff?
You're just being a dick.
Right? They're not paying any attention. So I'm just bothering these guys. Right. Anyhow, that was the only team that when I worked out at Marvin's workout, that was the only team that didn't take me seriously or didn't pay any attention to the times or anything I post. Yes.
Cincinnati Bengals.
No, the Cincinnati Bengals were super high on me.
Oh.
Super high. That Jim McNally was their O-line coach.
I'm going to say.
And he always called me the one that got away because he tried to draft me in the second round. Like, he was.
Really?
Oh, dude, he called me every single round. I'm standing on the table for you. I'm standing. Yeah. Jim McNally, what round great did guy.
You went in the 12th, right?
Don't even try to get me. Don't even try. And you know you're trying to get me on a
I got you on that
yeah,
one
okay.
before.
A 10th rounder.
10th rounder.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so no.
Jets.
It was the New York Jets.
Jets gonna Jets.
The Jets are gonna Jets.
That's why. You are a Jets fan.
Right, exactly.
That's why you're cursed.
Yeah.
And by the way, just to kind of put a wrap on, because I love the Marvin Washington story, and you paid it forward later in your career and his career.
Yeah, later in my career, I got done. We just won Super Bowl 32, and I'm in the training room. You know, I'm sure I had some surgery or whatever. I'm wrapped in ice, and Shanahan comes down to me and said, hey, dude, I need to ask you a question. And at this point, I'd probably played 8-9 years in the league, whatever it was. And he goes, hey, man, we need a rotational piece on our defense, a rotational guy that can play D-tackle, D-end, da-da-da-da. He goes, you've been in the league for a long time. You've played against all these guys. I don't really know these guys as guys. You know, I've got my evaluation of each guy. But he said, ultimately, it doesn't really matter as long as the guy fits kind of our culture and our football team. And I said, all right, well, let me see the list. And he gives me the list, and my eyes, I just kind of peruse the list, and right there, Marvin Washington. I said, sign Marvin. And so he goes, done. So he goes up to his office. Next thing you know, Marvin's part of our team. And Marvin and I won Super Bowl 33 together.
That's awesome.
So the Vandals, the Vandal that got me in the National, I don't play in the National Football League if it's not for Marvin Washington. And Dirty Wash doesn't get a Super Bowl ring if it's not for me.
And that's how many years later? Like,
that was like 10 years later. Yeah, eight years later.
That is full circle right there.
Yeah, right?
That is full circle.
Pretty cool.
Well, so basically you were like an assistant GM for Mike Shanahan at that point.
Yes, that's essentially, yeah.
And I sometimes, and I don't, and I'm sure there are plenty of fans out there that think the same thing. I totally feel this way. So you and I, we've been doing this show in Denver.
Uh-huh.
And ever since the Broncos won their Super Bowl in 2015, Super Bowl 50, and we've had all the down years since then, I am convinced that if I had been the general manager of the Denver Broncos this entire time, they'd be a playoff team.
Yeah.
Right now.
No, I don't.
I have no doubts.
I don't think there's any question. I don't, like.
So, like, if you and I worked together these last 8 years as running the Broncos.
No question. No,
I totally agree with
there
you.
There is zero question.
I have zero doubts.
I look at some of the moves made, and I'm like, why? Like, why would you do? For instance, I'll give you for instance. Okay, a guy that's never had a 1,000-yard season, a guy that's been injured almost every year that he's played, a guy that has averaged 2.5 touchdowns per year, you trade for a 5th and 6th round pick. I'm talking about Jerry Jeudy, and then you pay him a $58 million contract with $41 million guaranteed when he still has the option year. Why? Like, why would you do that? And again, it's based on talent, because there's no question, very much like the pro days we just talked about, there is no question athletically that guy's one of the most talented players in football. Well, what, all of a sudden that he's going to take responsibility for where he is right now in his career, that he was a first-round bust for the Denver Broncos, and now he's going to take responsibility after you pay him? Like, seriously, what could you possibly be thinking? Why would you make that move? Why would you think that it's a good idea to sink $41 million guaranteed into that guy? Now, I get it if he comes out in the first 7 weeks of the season, he balls out of control, and you say, let's lock him up to a long-term deal. Great, because he's got that kind of talent, Mike. Mm-hmm. He's just never been that kind of player. What's going to happen if all of a sudden he starts off the season kind of slow, and you're asking him to run block and to do some things because you guys are beasts up front? Like, what's going to happen then?
Did you just say balls out?
Yeah.
Isn't that a term you hate?
Yeah, I do hate
you
balls
hate that.
Out.
Whenever I brought that up.
I hate it when you say it.
Yeah, because if I say
it. Or when a player says it.
Like, hey, he's
kind of balling out.
He's balling out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a term that I normally don't
you
like.
You just used it. Why do you not like it so much?
Well, because I hear a player go, I'm just going to go out there and ball. That's what really bothers me. Is if I'm just going to go out there and ball, it means I'm not actually studying. I'm not really, like, I always say, just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional, right? You're like, if you just say, man, I just go out and ball, it means you don't study. And that irritates me. That's why.
That's
but
why.
If he does, if he goes out and is crazy good,
yeah,
and he's the focal point of your offense.
Yeah, then revisit it.
And then just go, and then walk up to his agent and go, do we want to lock him up long term?
Right.
What's it going to hurt you to wait and see if he produces? Like, that's what that, and I'll give you credit, dude. When they signed Russell Wilson here, you were one of the very few people in this town that was like, why would you sign him right now? Let's just wait.
Had two years left on the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just kicking into the contract extension. He's going to get $38 million paid by the Broncos and $1.2 million paid by the Steelers. Like, he's getting that. He's just dipping into that extension you signed him to 2 years ago. Like, why did you do it at that point? You didn't need to.
So, Russ, now a Steeler, and you can tell he's out from underneath the thumb of Sean Payton.
Right.
Because last year, Sean Payton took over and said, we need more anonymous donors around here. And
quit running for governor and quit kissing babies.
And so all the off-season workout videos that Russ liked to put out suddenly went away.
Yeah.
He's back, baby. Did you see the Russ workout video?
Yeah. It just is like the Rusties. I mean, I don't know how you guys do it. I really don't. I don't know how you stay on board with it. It was like there was like in the Russ video, okay, the Russ, my workout video, look how hard I'm working, everybody. Woo, it's gonna, the best is yet to come. But there was one thing that was entirely true based upon what I saw in that video, and one thing that was patently false, okay? So the one thing that was true is that he scrambled around inside the pocket, up and down, in and out, up and down, and then he finally threw it, and it was about 7.6 seconds worth of time before he threw it. That's 100% true. Nobody holds the ball longer than that dude. That dude will hold the ball and take sacks like nobody's business, like it's his job. Okay, so that part was true. The part that was false was he was actually throwing the ball from the pocket. Come on, everybody knows they didn't throw the ball from the pocket. He scrambles out, takes sacks. You know, he escapes the outside of the pocket. Like, I just is like, do we really need to see how hard you're working? Do we really need to see what great shape you're in? Do we really, like, who are you trying to sell?
And by the way,
the Rusties?
Is it, because is this just blissful, I guess, ignorance on the part of him and his team that they put this video out on the same day that Caleb Williams is doing his pro day?
Oh.
Because there's a part of me that's kind of like trying to grab his share of the spotlight.
Yeah, oh yeah, trying to get his shine a little bit.
You think it's calculated?
Right. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah?
I think his team calculates everything. Yeah. Hey, don't forget about my pro day. What a nerd.
Jeez, what a nerd. See, this is the kind of stuff, folks, that so we have affectionately labeled a group of fans out there as Rusties.
Yeah.
You know, kind of on the whole Swifties thing.
Uh-huh.
Rusties.
Yeah.
And you've had your battle with Rusties, that's for sure.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're all,
because they love to come after Sean Payton.
Oh, they do love to come after Sean Payton. They go after him. Like, I saw some of you people are so stupid. Like, I saw so many of you on social media. It just blows me away. Like, nobody's going to play for Sean Payton. He did Russell wrong, and he asked him to, you know, he asked him to waive his injury clause, and nobody will come back. Everybody hates Sean Payton. He's a tyrant. What a dick, you know. And meanwhile, not one but two players signed, agreed to contracts with other teams, and then Sean gave him a call and said, hey, man, I'd really like you to stay here. Okay, Sean, we'll do that. Thanks. Like, boy, Lutz, really affected.
Will Lutz, the kicker,
yeah.
went to Jacksonville, changed his mind, came back. Justin Sternad, a special teams guy, agreed with Carolina.
And came back. Do you really think?
By the way, when you were just doing that, you were really giving off like a real like Chris Farley type vibe.
Oh, was
right
that?
There. Yeah.
But do you really think, do you really think if players hated Sean? By the way, the other thing is there's like six former Saints that signed here. So if Sean Payton is such a tyrant and he's trying to sabotage people's careers and he's just a dick and he's, you know, he's messing with people's money, so do you think people would be so inclined that formerly played for him to come back to play for him? Do you really think, like, do you use any common sense or any logic whatsoever when you make claims about, you know, what a tyrant what a tyrannical rule Sean Payton has over the Denver Broncos. You think about it at all before you say it?
Well, he definitely has the kind of personality, and he's very direct, and there's a certain swagger slash
he's a jerk
arrogance
now.
That he
yeah,
has.
Oh yeah, he can be a jerk.
Yeah,
there's
he
no
can,
question.
But I noticed right from the start that you could tell he was a Bill Parcells disciple. I see and hear a lot of Parcells in Sean Payton. He's constantly referencing Bill Parcells, but it just makes for a real interesting AFC West, because now you got Sean Payton, and then you got the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, personality-wise, Jim Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
So did you see what Harbaugh did on his way out of Michigan?
Yeah, he had
a yard sale. Stink. Jim Harbaugh, as public a figure as you're going to get, invited people to come by his home and go through his stuff at a yard sale.
Right.
Is that the most Jim Harbaugh thing ever?
It is. And
I love him for it, by the way.
But I'm fascinated by what Jim Harbaugh collected and what was for sale. Here's a whole, stack of khaki pants.
Oh, I would love to get some of his khaki pants.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know why you wouldn't.
Why not?
Right. But I just, you know who did that all the time? Back in the, remember Bud Grant? Bud Grant.
I do. You might need to explain to some of our younger viewers.
Bud Grant was the coach of the Minnesota Vikings all through the 70s, went to 4 Super Bowls, head coach. Legendary. Just passed away a year ago or so, but legendary guy. When I do a Minnesota game, when I do a Vikings game, so his office is still, they've got it like preserved, behind glass, but it's kind of a showpiece, but it was also his office still. And when I was there, Bud Grant was there a bunch. Like he was there all the time. He had kind of emeritus status. Legendary coach. He used to have garage sales like every weekend. Like he would have and he'd have former autographed pictures of Fran Tarkenton he'd be selling, and all kinds of memorabilia and stuff he'd be getting out of his house. He did it forever.
Bud Grant was famous for back in the day when Minnesota football fans were actually tough, and you'd have to go to games outside at the old Met.
Yeah,
he was famous for it'd be like just frigid, and he'd be out there in short sleeves.
Yeah, Bud Grant. They
don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah, broke the mold. By the way, their new stadium though is beautiful. That thing's gorgeous.
Yeah, well, Minnesota fans need a dome stadium now.
Amen.
Not as tough as
Minnesota.
Anytime
I'm broadcasting in Minnesota, I'm glad there's a dome stadium.
No, I know. It's easy for me to say that, but I wish they build one here in Denver. Same exact reason. You ready to get some questions from the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. This is from John. Mark, J.J. McCarthy, can you explain the infatuation with J.J. McCarthy? Because when I look at his stats, they don't jump out at me.
Yeah, I can, because he actually is probably the one guy in this draft that runs the most pro-style offense. And therefore, you have to imagine that J.J. McCarthy, I'm talking about changing personnel groups, running the football, changing the strength and motioning and doing all that pre-snap stuff, calling plays in the huddle. Like there's a lot of guys that get to the NFL that have never called a play in the huddle. Do yourself a favor, man. Go back, just Google this. If you guys get a minute, go to YouTube, and it's Chris Sims trying to spit out a play call in the huddle when he first got to Tampa Bay with John Gruden. And I mean, it's like 4 different mistakes. And there is so much to know from a formational standpoint and all this stuff. So when you get into a formation, you got to know, hey man, if we're shifting or if we're fly, if we're flying the trips right, and are we in 12 personnel or 11 personnel, and where does that guy start and where does he finish? So I know where he starts, but I know what the finishing formation. And oftentimes what you'll see is if we're in a fly to some, fly to trips right, say. Like, fly to trips right, nasty. So we're going to start in a stack, right, north or south, and then we're going to fly across and we're getting to trips. But if we're short on time, the clock, I'm going to excommunicate the fly. I'm going to say, no, just line up over there. Like, to do all that stuff pre-snap, to understand the clock and the timing and all that stuff, like, nobody does that. And so JJ actually operates like a real pro-style offense. So from a learning curve standpoint, you're like, well, he's already done this under Jim Harbaugh, so he's the most versed at not only the pre-snap stuff, but also the progression-style offense that we all run in the NFL, that very few run in college football. Right. He has gone through progressions, which most guys, it's going to be new to them.
So I guess to kind of boil it down, because, you know, for a lot of people who are looking at these college prospects, you do tend to look at the numbers. You're not really interested in a guy's stats as much as you are just eye test. What transferable NFL skills or already pro readiness do you see in a quarterback? You're not necessarily interested in the numbers as much.
No, I'm not. I'm interested in, does a guy get through progressions? Does a guy actually understand, you know, changing the formation, changing the strength, you know, operating kind of more? That's the problem with college football, is it, you know, it just isn't, it doesn't, it's not very transferable. The quarterback position is not very transferable. You know, I keep hearing, like, our buddy Joel Klatt. Mm-hmm. Joel Klatt for Fox, phenomenal. The lead broadcaster college football. Guy is great. He was talking about, I don't understand in his podcast why Drake May is dropping. Like, and he talked about potential and his big throws over the top and his athleticism and how, like, his skill set from that standpoint is just extreme. Like, it, and my experience in the NFL is that doesn't win you football games. I always have this 70-30 rule that I talk about all the time. Like, 70% of the time, we better be on schedule. If we're not, we're in trouble. You know, 30% of the time, hey, things break down, you got to go make a play, right? But I want your default mechanism as a quarterback to be from your neck up, not from your neck down. So I want you to be able to make plays with your mind as opposed to your body. And the most reliable thing at the quarterback position, in my opinion, is being able to execute the boring. I need a guy that can execute the boring, not a guy that can flash. Like, if you're operating instead of 70-30, if you're operating 50-50, you're losing, because more bad things are going to happen to you than good things. That's my issue.
Another question from one of our great viewers out there. What was your reaction to Deion Sanders coming out and saying that if his son Shador was in this year's draft, he'd be the second quarterback taken, only behind Caleb Williams, ahead of Drake May, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Really?
I don't doubt that. I haven't studied Shador. I've watched some of his games. I mean, there's no question he's got, you know, athleticism and arm talent. And the other thing is, I would imagine, knowing Deion well, that his mentors and the people he has worked with are some of the best that have ever done
it. He's worked with Brady. I mean, he's buddies with Brady.
Yeah.
Shador is.
Yeah, so I would imagine that, unlike a lot of college football players, he's more versed in, you know, the understanding of, regardless of the system he's been in, the understanding of routes and route progressions and throwing progressions. So I don't doubt that he would be right up there at the top.
Well, it explains a lot why some mock drafts, they always have mock drafts already for 2025, that has Shador Sanders as being the number one presumed pick, you know, as long as he goes out and has a good year this year for the Buffs. Mm-hmm. Final question. I always love these really, you know, kind of inside football questions. Mark, is center an underrated position? What impact does a great center make? And you, as a left guard all those years, you're very intimate with what a center does.
Yeah, you know, I mean, in my day, a center would set the protection, and then we could overrule it based upon, you know, kind of all went down. Nowadays, most of the quarterbacks set that, which would not fly with me if I was coaching. I don't need the quarterback. I need our guys to understand and to set the rules of where we're going. Because quarterbacks, you know, quarterbacks are just like, I want to switch it from, you know, let's call it 52 to 44. And so you walk up there and go, 52's the mic, 52's the mic, blue 80, blue 80, 44's the mic, 44, how not? You know, and you're like, yo, you really? And now we're all edged and you're like, and he gets sacked and you're pissed at us. No, you're the dumbass that switched it and didn't give us time to communicate it, right? You see it all. I see it all the time. All
so an offensive, if it was left to you guys, not only does the correct change get made, but done so in a time in which the offensive linemen now have a chance to really get locked in.
In a timely fashion.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers was the worst. He used to do it all the time. Drove me crazy. I knew a couple coaches that coached on the staff. You couldn't go crazy about it. But yeah, like I just think I would like to take it off the quarterback's plate. As a matter of fact, you know, one of the things that Jason Kelce probably doesn't get enough credit for, Jason Kelce said everything in Philadelphia, especially for a young quarterback. When Jalen Hurts first came in, that was not on Jalen Hurts' plate. He didn't have to know that.
Yeah, you can see that actually when you watch Eagles games. Right. You can see how much he's in control.
Just take it off the quarterback's plate.
Yeah.
And so now the quarterback has to know when we designate a guy, you know, you have to understand if we're turning a certain way, you know, if we're turning 3 week and we designate a guy, or even if we change a guy, then you have to know, hey, if the fourth guy comes weak, that's my guy, right? I've got to know that. So those are things that have to happen. But yeah, good center. I mean, to be an anchor. The other thing is a lot of times what they try to do is they try to, you know, the defenses will try to lock that guy up one-on-one, you know, against a guy who's a good pass rusher, and you're already at a disadvantage because you got to snap the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So what they'll do is they'll walk up linebackers or walk up, and they'll try to get that nose guard or that, you know, come into a nickel situation with a guy who can really pass rush and put him at the nose in a known passing situation, and then walk other guys up, so you have to go mingo man. And then you're basically saying, hey, man, let's just lock the center up one-on-one and take advantage of that. So, yeah, it's a really vital, important position. So, by the way, really quick, you know, we were talking about being a GM.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole, I mean, Justin Fields, the market was set with Justin Fields, right? They got a six with a conditional, right. Could be a fourth round pick, right? Why did you trade him? Like, if you and I are going to be GMs, why'd you trade him at when the market was already, hey, we're not giving much market-wise, why did you get rid of him? Because the reason I tell you that is because come draft time, what's going to happen to the draft? What do you think is going to happen? Quarterbacks that shouldn't be taken in the top 10 are going to get elevated to the top 10, right?
Right.
So there's going to be a run on quarterbacks. Like, a lot of people think four of the first four picks are going to be quarterbacks. Somebody's moving up into Arizona spot. And if I was Arizona, do you really believe in Kyler Murray?
Right.
But, like, there's going to be at least four quarterbacks taken maybe in the first four spots where they're going to push good football players back, right? Really good football players back. Like, if four quarterbacks are taken in the first four spots or the first six spots, say the Giants, it's the Giants, whatever it is, I go, then there's, you know, then you got your choice between Bo Nix and Michael Penix. At that point, you know what's going to become more valuable? Justin Fields.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, now you're going to have some leverage. Or, last year, Flacco, Wilson. I mean, go through the backup quarterback, Rudolph.
Yeah.
Trubisky. Can we just keep going through
Jake Browning.
Jake Browning.
Keep going.
So, at some point, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when guys get hurt. At some point, somebody in training camp or somebody in the first week is going to get hurt. Does Justin Fields then all of a sudden become a more valuable commodity? And the answer is yes. So, why the hell do you trade a guy for a sixth rounder?
Well, let me answer that.
Yeah.
And this is why we would be such good general managers. Because we wouldn't get caught up in the idea that we have to move Justin Fields out of Chicago because we don't want to cause any friction or any dreaded distractions for Caleb Williams.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So we got to move Fields out because, you know, there still might be some people who are loyal to Fields and fans that believe Fields
could be the answer and got a raw deal. So if Caleb Williams has a bad day at practice and throws a couple of picks, everyone's like, oh, hey, you know, what about Fields?
He's looking over his shoulder. He can't, so, well, I would get him an emotional support ferret. Right? Caleb Williams needs an emotional support ferret that he can snuggle up with. And when he throws a couple of picks, he can cry. He can put that ferret on his little shoulder and he can nestle his little head next to it and he can cry on this ferret. Do they have emotional support ferrets?
Oh, I'm sure they got emotional support everything. But that's why you and I, let's just say if we were running an NFL team, we probably would not be big. The NFLPA would probably not be a big like friend of ours.
Yeah.
Because they'd be like, you're too mean to players, especially quarterbacks. Right. Quarterbacks need to be propped up.
I would be
quarterbacks, every other sport, every other position on the team, massive competition, right?
Right.
Except for quarterback. Quarterbacks, you got to make them comfortable.
Yeah.
Can't be looking over their shoulder. Yeah. That's why Justin Fields was traded. Because you're right. Otherwise, you make an argument that hold on to him. His value is only going to go up.
His value is going to increase.
Yeah.
Come draft time, you'd have gotten a third or a second maybe. With a desperate quarterback team?
Yeah. And the inevitable injuries you're talking about? Sure.
Yeah. 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 Just stupid. That, again, why you and I are better GMs than all the GMs out there. We're available. Just come get us.
We are available,
available. Not really doing anything.
Nope.
My schedule's pretty empty.
Yeah. Have you been watching this show?
Hey, for everybody involved in the Stink Truth Podcast, thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back with you guys next week.